Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today we have someone who we've had on the podcast before. It is my good friend, Nancy Ross. And if you listened to the episode that I did recently with Robin Linkhart about culture and Community of Christ, you might remember me slipping in at the end saying that I was planning on doing a follow-up with Nancy. Nancy and I are both new to the church, so we kind of have a new perspective on the church. And so this was a conversation that we've had kind of off and on over the last few years of just the different cultural things that we've encountered as we have come to Community of Christ. And so I now have Nancy on, and we are going to have this conversation. So thanks, Nancy.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here, Brittany. So I was just thinking that often I feel like I talk to people who've maybe church shopped a little bit, and that they're always like, oh, you know, I'm looking for something that feels like home, but everywhere I go, it doesn't feel like home. And I think one of the tricky things is that other denominations and other churches aren't going to have all the trappings, like the cultural trappings of like the LDS church, because they're not LDS. But sometimes these cultural differences can make a huge difference to our immediate like comfort level when we visit a new church or a new congregation. What are your thoughts there?
I totally agree. And I know that when I first came to Community of Christ, some of the cultural nuances were some of the first things that I noticed, the cultural differences. For example, my first experience with Community of Christ was not in a congregation. It was actually at a camp. But learning that the director of the camp, the pastor of the congregation, was also president of 70, Robin Linkhart. I mean, right there, boom, that's a cultural difference. Mm-hmm. The fact that leadership to that degree, who served over a missional role over a geographical area, I would just find in the woods, camping with regular people, you know, just approachable leadership like that was very different. And then, of course, camping, there was just different styles of worship, different styles of classes, et cetera. But in my mind, that was immediately what I went to. Some of the theological differences were important, yes, but culture, I think, is so important because it impacts the lived experience of church life, if that makes sense.
Right. And it kind of shapes the look and feel of church life in ways that maybe we're unaware of, because if you've always like bowed your head and folded your arms to say a prayer, then that's what prayer is, right? Like that is like the bodily appropriate response to prayer. But there are actually a lot of different ways to pray, and so if you see people praying differently, you might have like that's going to be something you're going to notice, and then you might have a feeling about that. And I think it's fine if we have feelings, but we also want to realize that like there are legitimately different ways to engage in worship. And, you know, if we have done one particular style our whole life, we may not be so aware of that.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up prayer, because I don't know if you remember the song, the old LDS primary song. It basically maps out what a prayer is. And it, yep. I'm not going to sing it, but it starts out and it literally, the lyrics are something like, I begin by saying, Dear Heavenly Father, I thank thee for blessings each day or something. And then it goes on. So it like maps out the prayer. And so I do remember one of the first times, I don't think this was at camp, I think this was in the congregation, that I heard somebody pray to Creator God. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they even had an even more feminine, I can't remember, but I think it was actually more strikingly feminine than even Creator. Mm-hmm. And it was so refreshing and also jarring and also, is this okay? And, but it was what I wanted. And so there was just all these mixed feelings, and it just kind of brings up a lot of baggage, I guess, when you hit a cultural difference like that.
Yeah, no, I'm remembering the primary song that you're referencing. I was a Sunbeam teacher for a really long, like off and on for a really long time. So I'm thinking of that song, right? And that prescribes very specific steps for prayer. prayer. You know, I begin by saying, "Dear Heavenly Father, I thank him for blessings he sends. And humbly I ask for the things that I need in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen." Right? Like that's, that is the appropriate prayer formula. And so deviating from that feels really tricky. One thing, sometimes I feel like I struggle to pray aloud in kind of more public settings because I don't necessarily want to pray like that. And I haven't always figured out like how I want to pray now or I wrestle with, oh, do I want to say in the name of Jesus Christ, amen? Or how am I going to open this prayer? You know, like these feel like big questions to me. So sometimes I avoid public prayer because it's like transitioning culturally feels tricky, like, and fraught, even though you might say, well, they're just words that we use to begin and end. Somehow it feels tricky. So in my first experience kind of in a community of Christ setting was with Seth Bryant, who was leading the very first meeting. And this was like in December of 2015, the very first meeting of my new Southern Utah Community of Christ congregation. And what happened was that he kind of came down to visit us from Salt Lake because he was the pastor of the co-pastor of the Salt Lake congregation at the time. And then we knew that there were going to be a certain number of people there, and he kind of assigned out some roles. And I was playing the piano, right? So I'm playing like totally unfamiliar hymns, just super terrifying. And in a room full of people who didn't know each other. And it was a lot of awkwardness. And then as the service progressed, there were a number of elements that were kind of difficult for culturally. One was the lighting of the peace candle. And I was like, huh. I spent a lot of time thinking about it. It's like, huh, there is a candle. You know, we are using a candle. And I came home afterwards to my husband and was like, you know, there was a candle and some chimes. And he was like, what? It's already at that time not super comfortable with this whole like, you know, exploring other churches thing. And but that was for both of us kind of a point of discomfort, simply because it was different from what we had done before. You know, I think that also some of these differences tend to prey on maybe some of the prejudices we have against particular kinds of denominations. I think, you know, some of you associate like candles with Catholicism or kind of high Anglican church. And we're like, oh, you know, we've spent so much time in our lives saying, oh, well, we're not them. And then suddenly we're kind of confronted with some of the trappings of things we associate with those other traditions. It's like, I don't know what to do with this. Is that?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know for me for a while, well, and even still to this day, I struggle with certain rituals. If I think that something looks like something else that I don't particularly find meaningful, mm-hmm. I can have a hard time just kind of sitting there and being okay with other people finding it meaningful. Sometimes mm-hmm. I get in the habit of thinking, well, if I'm uncomfortable, then this person's uncomfortable and this person's uncomfortable. And then I hear that like that was their favorite part of the service, you know? And I just think, well, okay.
Right. And how tricky that is to navigate. Because also in coming from an LDS background, there's a sense that like true or not, like this is the way we've always done things. And like, this is how, you know, a sense that like all the things we do are imbued with meaning and they're supposed to be like that. And everybody's supposed to conform in a particular way. And so coming into congregate, you know, many Community of Christ congregations, people may have a bunch of different kinds of backgrounds and worshiped in different ways and believe different things. And so there isn't necessarily a one right way for people to converge on. And that's a huge blessing and good thing about Community of Christ, but it's such an adjustment in coming from a tradition where there is only one right way. And letting go of that feels really difficult. I love the Community of Christ hymn book. And even though so many of the hymns were, you know, like unfamiliar, I feel like our congregation has worked through quite a lot of the hymn book. And so now I've, you know, heard or sung things at least once, but, and love it and love the way in which it was constructed and the messaging of the hymns and think all of that is great. But as we were working through, as I was encountering many new hymns for the first time, or maybe a very different style of hymn than I was used to, that didn't sound like, you know, Rayfawn Williams in the early 20th century from an English hymnal tradition sounded a little off or invoked that kind of prejudice against other denominations, where I might say like, oh, well, this style is like that, and I don't identify with that. And but I could also see that my friends in the congregation who had come from different backgrounds, that they were totally comfortable with this style of music. And I was like, what's wrong with me? You know, like what's wrong with me that my Christianity can't stretch this far? And those are things to be overcome, or to realize that like there is more than one right way to do this. And I think that takes time and experience to gain a level of comfort with, maybe I don't ever have to like something or find it meaningful to me, but I've also got to be able to make space for other people to find like you said, other people to find meaningful moments, and maybe even some of the things that make me feel uncomfortable. And so, but that's also, I think, a beautiful thing about Community of Christ, that we can find meaning in these different things, that our worship services can take different formats, that they can include a lot of different elements, with the idea that hopefully there's something in there for everyone, where everyone can find meaning in a service.
Yeah, I really like how you worded that. And I think, and I assume that most of our listeners know this by now, but there is a wide variety of worship styles, of theology, of cultural practices that are in Community of Christ. There's not one correlated, mm-hmm. this is how you should do it. I think you touched on that, which makes this whole topic, I mean, Nancy, you're in Southern Utah and I almost said Central Utah, but that's not true. I'm in Northern Utah. And our experience with Community of Christ culture is not super broad. I mean, we have both experienced life outside of our congregation, but we're just speaking from our perspective, being new to the church, coming in and figuring this out along the way. And a lot of times I feel like, how do I want to word this? Sometimes this experience almost feels like one big experiment almost. Not that my path with the church is an experiment, but that I'm constantly just reevaluating where does this practice come from, or where does this belief come from, or where does this cultural quirk come from? Because I think, as we heard in the episode that I did with Robin, there is a lot of historical culture that is just woven through. And so if that's not explained to you, mm-hmm. sometimes you'll walk into just some sort of colloquialism. Is that the word? Colloquial?
Well, yeah, colloquialism.
Yeah. And, you know, you won't necessarily know where this is coming from, especially the common shared words between Community of Christ and the LDS mm-hmm. Church. They can mean vastly different things. Mm. And so a lot of times I feel like I'm almost making this up as I go when I run into a new thing, because I'm like, okay, where is this coming from? Is this trigger, whether good or for bad, is this coming from something negative from my past? Or is this just a quirky Community of Christ thing that's like not a big deal that I don't need to worry about? That kind of thing. So in this conversation, you know, I'm just hoping to lift up some of those kinds of things that maybe we were a little surprised by.
Sure. And I'm wondering, Brittany, if you could, and maybe we can both do this, I'm wondering if you could just tell us, like, if someone were to come to your congregation for the first time, what were some of those things that you first noticed or that you first saw as like, ooh, this is unusual? Like, what were those things that if someone were to come like this coming Sunday, would they be likely to encounter that might be quite new to them and maybe a little unsettling as a result of its newness?
Yeah, I think one of the first things right off the bat, and I don't mean for this to sound negative towards any LDS ward or person that I have interacted with, but I don't feel like LDS wards are very friendly at all. I mean, you can walk in there and just kind of blend in with the crowd, even if you have a whole herd of kids with you. You might not be approached because somebody might think, oh, I don't know. I just, I've been a visitor before in a lot of Mormon wards, and I've never really been approached. Maybe if you're in Relief Society or something, they'll notice you a little bit more, but you just kind of blend in with the crowd, and that's not the case in Community of Christ. And so I know in our congregation, we have a lot of enthusiastic members, and they get excited when new people come, and new people come pretty regularly, if not every Sunday.
Pause for a second and maybe point out that many Community of Christ congregations aren't also as big as LDS wards. And so there, it's not just, it's partly, maybe Community of Christ folks are friendlier. Certainly many people that I've met in Community of Christ are super friendly, but also the smaller size of the congregation means that it's harder to sit at the back and, have no one notice you because it's so small. They're smaller than what you might be used to.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Yeah, and so with that has come, ironically, in the LDS Church, there's that saying of every member a missionary. Mm-hmm. And I just never really found that to be true. Again, I live in Utah in a suburb of Salt Lake City, so I feel like everyone just assumes that everybody else is Mormon. Mm-hmm. But in Community of Christ, at least in the Salt Lake congregation, everybody truly is a missionary. I mean, everybody is brand new to the church. Everybody's super enthusiastic about it. And so we get really excited to share. And we have a wall full of resources, whether it's Doctrine and Covenants or sharing in Community of Christ, the Illustrated History. We even have some hymnals saved that we can pass out for people to take. And we just have a lot of love and enthusiasm for our church. And so I don't feel like that is something that most of our visitors expect, mm-hmm. Because they're just used to blending in with the crowd and they're used to not being noticed or seen or really talk too much. Mm-hmm. So that I think is off the bat the first thing that I noticed in my congregation, and probably what a lot of people who have visited would say noticed as well, is they get approached in a very friendly way, and then offered resources, asked questions like, what brings you here today? That kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, what else would, I'm a new person. I'm coming into the Salt Lake congregation and I'm like, whoa, there aren't like hordes and hordes of people that I might expect here, but this is a little more intimate. It's a smaller group of people. There are people who are maybe, introducing themselves and asking about myself or whatever. What else are they going to experience? So now I'm interviewing you just so
Yeah, that's totally fine.
what else are they going to encounter that is going to be new in your experience?
This actually was just asked by a visitor last week. They brought their kids. I think there were three of them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our kids in the congregation will kind of start out in the pew and, their parents are trying to keep them semi-sort of quiet. And then we always have a children's focus moment relatively early in the service. Mm-hmm. And we pass out activity bags. And after that, it's just kind of become a cultural thing where the kids just go to the back of the sanctuary or they go in our little nursery that's just, there's a big glass window at the back of the sanctuary and there's a room back there. So the kids will either play back there or they play in the space at the back of the sanctuary and they'll eat their snacks together and they'll do their little activities together, et cetera. And one of the parents was really not sure if their kids should be doing that either. They're like, is this okay? Should I be calling my kid back? Should I be like disciplining them and making them sit quietly in the pew? What is the idea of reverence in this congregation? And I told them that we don't really have one because we have a lot of kids, but not a lot of kids compared to an LDS ward. But for Community of Christ congregation, we have a lot of children.
Can I just jump in on that? Mm-hmm. I've been to your congregation just a couple of times and after the children's focus moment, don't you pass out bags of activities and snacks to all the kids?
Yeah. Yeah.
So and that's so too.
Yeah. And a lot of times when people come, if we do notice families that are there for the first time, you know, we'll kind of explain that. This mm-hmm. is the time where we come up and we have, you know, a little children's church moment. And then we pass out bags with coloring books and different activities, foam blocks and crayons and stuff like that. And then, yeah, there's usually some fruit snacks or pretzels or whatever in there. So yeah, that's been a big thing because a lot of our visitors bring kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's been one that I've found myself explaining over and over and over again. And then we generally speaking just follow the worship helps that the church puts out. So it looks, I guess, as typical as you can be in Community of Christ, where we'll have prayer for peace, different readings, focus on the lectionary. So we have a sermon about whatever scripture is in the Revised Common Lectionary. We do potlucks on the third Sunday, which has been surprising to some people, where they just happen to show up on the third Sunday and then we invite them for potluck and they're like, oh, we weren't prepared for that. You know, and they don't know if they should stay and eat or if they're invited or welcome. So we try to always make sure that that is made known, that anyone can eat, whether you brought food or not. I'm trying to think of what other things we do on a Sunday that might look different. Recently, just this past year, since 2019 started, we've been doing coffee and conversation instead of Sunday school. Mm-hmm. And so right now we're going over the book Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time by Marcus Borg. And so that's our quote unquote Sunday school. So just the fact that we have a coffee machine is pretty jarring, I would assume, for some people. Mm-hmm. And I actually, yeah, I've had conversations that, you know, because we have a coffee machine out, and then it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. What do you call the word of wisdom? Like, don't you guys have that too? And it's like, oh, okay. And so then we, you know, go down that road. And yeah, we also, you know, we'll do some spiritual practices. So we've done Lectio Divina. We've done Dwelling in the Word, which is Lectio Divina. I'm trying to think of other, we've just done different meditations and things like that in our actual worship service. Sometimes we've done writing exercises or journaling where we'll pass out little pieces of paper, where we'll write a letter to ourselves or write a letter to someone that we need to forgive or who needs to forgive us, or, you know, whatever the activity may be, which again is, I guess the larger cultural point of that would be that a lot of this stuff is just more hands-on. Our church service isn't, it can be a passive thing that you just sit through, but it can also be interactive. You know, we stand for hymns, we stand for generally the opening and closing, and we stand to pray, and yeah, those things are different as well.
So can I also just, because I don't often visit other Community of Christ congregations, maybe except for I'm always, or I've been to the Sunstone Sunday at your congregation for the last couple of years. A couple of things that I have noticed is that you use a projector. So sometimes you have announcements on the projector. Yeah. And we don't project in LDS, right? Like, so that's...
we have a big TV in the front of our sanctuary.
But right. And those are just small, those are just small differences, but sometimes they can feel like big cultural differences when you're encountering them.
Yeah. Oh, another thing, you know, is public sacraments. So we've done the sacrament of administration or laying on of hands in the middle of a worship service. We've done ordinations, confirmations, baptisms. And we've had random visitors just show up on a day that we're baptizing some people. And they're like, oh, you do this on a Sunday morning? Because that's different. when we've had, you know, a setting apart service for the new pastor or ordination or confirmation, those things in the larger culture here are generally done in private or on a Saturday, or, you know, it's only a family thing that whatever. But in Community of Christ, those things can happen in the middle of a Sunday worship, which has been surprising for people.
Mm-hmm. And I think, so even some of the thing, right. And so, and that's really normal in Community of Christ, right? That, mm-hmm. that a big sacrament like baptism, confirmation, ordination, that these things would happen like in the middle of the Sunday morning service. But that would be very unusual, you know, in an LDS context. A couple of things I'm also thinking about too, like elements of the service, which probably seem very routine now to me and you, but like we usually don't have someone get up and read a scripture in the LDS tradition. Like no one, like, and so like readings aren't really part of a church service where they're often, they're typically part of a church service in Community of Christ. And things maybe like call and response or responsive reading or, you know, other kinds of ways for the speaker or someone to kind of interact with the congregation, you know, with a script also can feel very unusual to LDS folks. You know, I remember feeling that in my first meetings with Community of Christ, just a little unsure of the meaning of everything or why do we get up and do readings? And initially I found that a little, just not what I was used to. And then I came to realize, you know, when I first started going to Community of Christ, I was really just in a lot of emotional pain from having felt very pushed out of my LDS congregation. And what I found, especially with readings, is that the worship helps offer a lot of readings from like lectures, from just straight up reading the lectionary text, maybe before a sermon would be an option, or a poem, or the prayer for peace, or some other kind of reading. But then I came to feel like sometimes when we don't feel like we have all the right words ourselves, that sometimes picking a reading which represents a lot of the right kinds of words is a really healing thing, if that makes sense. And so very quickly, I think that was one of the more uncomfortable things about services that became comfortable, which was like, I'm in pain and I am hurting and I don't necessarily have the right words of comfort right now, but here are some words of comfort and they've been provided and they sound good to me. So I'm going to stand up and read them. You know what I mean? Like that's, that was something again, that I was, that was unusual to begin with and then quickly became a more comfortable thing and even a helpful thing as I was just experiencing a painful part of my faith transition.
Yeah, I relate to that a lot. I remember just certain elements that I didn't, that just seemed odd. And, you know, the prayer for peace was one of them. I thought that it was beautiful in a way, but then was also just like, so we're just praying for a random country. There's no, like, I didn't understand who chose the country or why we picked a different country. Like, why was it necessary to pray for countries? Not necessarily current events that were going on. You know, I had a lot of questions about it. And truthfully, I haven't necessarily answered those questions, but now I find the prayer for peace to be one of the most meaningful parts of the church. And the fact that this prayer is said throughout congregations, throughout the world, and that we're all collectively coming together to pause, to uphold a group of people that we might not feel connected to, now we feel connected to them. But yeah, at first that it was just a different thing. It wasn't uncomfortable. I didn't disagree with it. I just had a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And it was so out of my norm that there was, I don't know, reason to pause, I guess. So I definitely relate to that, that, you know, what might be perceived as uncomfortable at first just becomes deeply meaningful, kind of the more you do it.
Yeah. And I think that the way this, I've kind of seen this process kind of take shape is that I feel like in a typical service, which is what you do in Salt Lake, a lot of different kinds of connection are presented, you know, from meeting people before a service or going to coffee hour or, you know, having a potluck, to different kinds of spiritual practices being engaged in the service, different kinds of hymns being sung, you know, letting kids do their thing and trying to make them all sit quietly, is that it offers, you know, it's, I feel like it's, there's more of an understanding that we don't all have to find supreme meaning in each part, but that we can be like, oh, I like that. Or that really spoke to me, with an understanding that not all parts of the service are for me, right? Like that some of these other parts of the service are going to be for other people and it's important that they get their thing too. Does that feels a little more democratic?
Yeah, to me that reflects our enduring principles, like unity and diversity, blessings of community, where we don't have to all encounter God in the exact same way, and we can provide opportunities to encounter the divine and to encounter community in different and diverse ways that are all equally important.
Right.
So Nancy, I want to hear how you do church in St. George, because I know that it is different from how I do church in Salt Lake.
It is different. And right, because we don't have to do a one right way. All these things are going to look a little bit different. Often my congregation is described as a new expression of Community of Christ. So we are a tiny emerging congregation. We probably have about 4 to 6 adults on a Sunday. We have a very small and very committed group of folks. Initially, we were almost exclusively former LDS people, but now about half our congregation are people who have never been LDS, which surprises me to no end. I'm still trying to make sense of that.
I love it too.
And I love my people. Like I love my people so deeply. But what we do is really different, because so first off it started, initially we were doing something that looked a little bit more like your congregation, but on the scaled down version, because we just didn't have a lot of folks to be able to do all the different pieces. And then we kind of switched pastors. We ended up moving our meeting from like a sanctuary space to more of a multi-purpose room space, which accommodated the children that we had a bit better if we were in a less formal space. And we also moved from more of a traditional kind of church service with like a speaker and, you know, you begin and end with a hymn and there are some readings, into a less formally constructed session group. And you can imagine, right, like, you know, it would be a little difficult if you had to like give a sermon once a month, every month, which it would kind of be like in our congregation just to rotate around, but it works a lot better for us to have a discussion. So that is our worship. And that is worship, right? Like we can worship God in community by deepening our relationships and trying to better understand spirituality through discussion. So for us, we usually kind of come into our space. We're still in the multi-purpose space. Sometimes during particular times of year, especially if there's a holiday coming up, we try and make sure that we have some kind of child-focused activity or plan for the kids. But these days we would only bring our kids probably if we had a special activity. And that certainly isn't every Sunday. We just don't have enough folks to be able to make that happen. But we do try to make sure that that does happen at least semi-regularly. We're probably better at that during the summer than we are at other times of year. So there's that. We sit at a table. And we only need one table because we're a small crowd, and we usually go around the table and we share joys and concerns, not unlike a Relief Society Good News Minute, but with one key difference, which is that we want to hear what's going well in people's lives, and we also want to hear what people are struggling with. The idea that we can celebrate people's joys with them, and that's really important, but we can also commiserate and empathize with people and whatever they're struggling with. And I can't tell you like how many times in the process of sharing joys and concerns, I've like burst into tears in the middle of sharing concerns, but I know my congregation and they always show so much love and empathy when myself or someone else is struggling. And we make a lot of time for hearing that. So it's not like we set aside 5 minutes for doing this and we set aside 10 minutes for doing that. We try to kind of keep things pretty organic. And if someone has something big that they need to discuss or share, then we make time for that. And that's really, I think, one of the real strengths of a small congregation is the intimacy with which you know other people. And then hopefully can trust them. And I certainly trust my congregation quite a lot. And that our discussion time has really We know, I think, in each other at a fairly deep level. So we share joys and concerns. We might do, after joys and concerns, we might do any kind of congregational business. It might be planning, you know, for future weeks. Or my congregation is very social justice oriented. And so often we would take time early in our meeting to like literally plan stuff. You know, if we're doing something for Pride, we might divvy up responsibilities or figure out what needs to be done. This coming weekend, we're working with the local Unitarians to try and start a progressive faith communities of Southern Utah group that we can partner with to do more social justice stuff as a bigger group of smaller progressive faith groups. And so in last week's meeting, we took some time to be like, okay, well, what are the things we're going to need to be bringing? Where are we going to be meeting? Let's make sure we're, you know, just the business of church and getting ready for stuff in the future. And all of that happens during like our regular meeting. Then usually we have someone who brings, and there might be like a prayer or a reading or something else that is shared during this time. We also then usually proceed on to a reading. We've done a lot of lectionary readings in the past, and that's really helped me reform my own reading of scripture. And we usually would do like a Lectio Divina or other kind of spiritual reading practice with a text. More recently, we've experimented with asking people to bring in some different texts that are meaningful to them. And so just today, I know this podcast won't be posted today, but just today it was in the news all over that the poet Mary Oliver had died. Well, one of our congregants, one of the people who worships with us, last month brought Mary Oliver's poem Wild Geese, and Wild Geese was our sacred text, and we engaged in Lectio Divina with the poem, and that was really beautiful. At other times, we've had people bring in different texts that were different texts or short stories or things that were like really deeply meaningful, and then shared them, and we discussed them as they were as a sacred text. And that's been, people in my congregation believe a lot of different things, and so this is one way where we can use those shared values to and spiritual practices to connect with the text. Recently, I brought in a few paragraphs from Harry Potter book 7, and that was my offering of a sacred text, and that turned into a really lovely conversation. But there is the idea that we can also name, my congregation is very flexible, we're a little bit experimental, we're very progressive, and so the idea that we would experiment with things, with texts beyond canon, is pretty typical for us. And then we usually let that play out, and our conversations usually last about 2 hours. And so that's kind of our meeting. We often do, or we have had a lot of guests in the past, and usually they're expecting something more of a church service, like what you describe in Salt Lake. And what they really want to do is like, just check it out and like hide in the back. But there is no hiding in the back when there's only like 5 people in the room. You know, and so we invite people to the table, and they're usually really surprised by what we're doing. We can usually, you know, we share and we introduce ourselves, and you know, if we would have a visitor, we'd reorient our time to around like, you know, explaining who we are and what we're doing, and you know, asking the visitor about themselves. But it's probably a more intimate gathering than a visitor would usually expect, and so I think that's difficult. We don't necessarily see a ton of folks for a second time because I think they want to try something out and hide at the back for a little while. And our intimate gatherings don't really allow for that. And that's just kind of where we're at right now. But so we have different kinds of worship formats, and we kind of do slightly different things in our congregations. And all of that is community of Christ.
Ain't that the truth? I kind of love that. I love that what works in your congregation works for you, and that it's molded and formed and shaped by the response that your people have, that those who are coming to worship with you want to experience. And then I love the same thing about my congregation, that, you know, a lot of the things that we've done this year have been in response of the people, from the people. You know, they wanted a more casual Sunday school class. And so we took steps to do that and wanted more spiritual practices and all those things. And so, yeah, this is something that I think we've said a couple times so far, but there's no one right way to do Community of Christ, which is really, really freeing and something that I find a lot of value and meaning in. But then I do know that some seekers, it can be confusing because they think, okay, well, so what does the church teach? How does the church just be the church? You know, they want some sort of consistency. They want some sort of correlation, if you will. But that's not necessarily what Community of Christ does to the level that they're used to. Of course, we have our shared values and our enduring principles and our mission initiatives and, you know, all these things that tie us together as a denomination. But the way that those things are lived out are very, very contextual and very, very different, which means that the culture in one congregation is going to look very different from another congregation.
Absolutely. And that's so, it's both so important and it's also tricky, right? Like that's like, it's when you don't have a conformity culture, then you've got to be a little more democratic in the way that you approach things. You got to respond to people. How do you want to do this? What do you need? And then try and find a way to incorporate that into the service, where a one-size-fits-all model doesn't need to respond to the needs of individual people. But it does mean there is tremendous consistency. So, yeah, I mean, I really like, you know, I have really thrived and grown spiritually in the discussion model that we've had. And I do love visiting, you know, like the Salt Lake congregation and doing something very different. And I imagine that size and location have a lot to say about what we do on a Sunday and how we do it. If I had 50 people on a Sunday, we would have to do something very different. Yeah. Because that would be, we would have different needs. And even I think 20 or 30 people, you know, we would have different needs and we would have to construct a way of worshiping on a Sunday that met the needs of all those folks, or that at least tried to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nancy, as you were talking about your congregation, I thought of two other things that are something that you would find in Salt Lake. And I think, well, I know you would find in other Community of Christ congregations too, that are usually kind of high up there on seekers wanting more clarification about, et cetera. One of them being that every church service, there's an offering collected. So we call it Disciples Generous Response. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are used to discreetly passing an envelope to their church leadership, or I hear that you can now pay tithing for the LDS church online. That wasn't really a thing when I was a Mormon, but apparently you can do it now. Mm-hmm. But it's not a public thing. And in Community of Christ, it can also not be a public thing. I mean, you can hand something. We have envelopes too. You can hand an envelope to your pastor, or you can pay your tithing online. But there is a set aside portion of the service where we talk about generosity and we talk about being grateful and we talk about giving back and we talk about the impact of our giving in the world. And then trays are passed around. We usually in Salt Lake, oftentimes we'll have the kids collect the offering. So they're the ones that will go around with the trays. My daughters really enjoy doing that. And that's something that I know has bothered a lot of seekers. I mean, I don't want to say a lot, but I've heard it questioned and like, oh, that was a little uncomfortable, or if I'm getting to know them a little bit better and talking to them, that's usually something that they want clarification for, because it feels just so out of the ordinary to be asked for money in a church service and then to have a tray passed around, which in the larger Christian world, I think is pretty universal, that offering trays are passed around, collection trays. I mean, they're called different things, but that's just kind of something that happens, but it does not happen in the LDS church. And so that can be something. And I think it's also can be triggering, because tithing can be such a point of hurt and pain from Latter-day Seekers, and pain, frustration, there's a lot of baggage that comes along with that. So I think that that particular element of the service can sometimes feel a little triggering. Yeah. And then the second thing that I thought of was just kind of explaining communion real quick. We do communion on the first Sunday of every month, and we kneel with those who are saying the prayer. And so you'll see the whole congregation just get up and kneel together, which is different. And then we don't pass the trays down the rows. The person officiating communion, serving communion, will serve each person individually, and they'll physically go down the rows. And that is something that is very different for our Latter-day Seekers. And there have been a couple moments where I've been passing communion, serving communion. It's not passing, it's serving. And someone will try to take the tray from me. So you just kind of have to, like,
hold on.
Firmly hold it, because I don't want it to get away from me. So, yeah, that's usually something that is, it has been a source of just like, what? This is different. And then also we have some inclusive prayers that don't use the traditional father language, male pronouns for God. They are more gender neutral. And so I think they're called the contemporary prayers, mm-hmm. that are listed in the hymnal. And that, those are generally the prayers that I like to say when I serve communion. And I actually don't think, very rarely will we hear the traditional ones in Salt Lake. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the traditional hymns, but, or not hymns, the traditional prayers. But for us, it's, we really want it to be community of Christ. And that's what feels community of Christ to us. But yeah, I've answered questions about that as well. Like, when did you guys change the prayers? And, you know, it's, again, one of those new things that people brush up against that is just different and new.
Yeah. And I think it's been helpful to me in all these things to see that, like, all these different worship elements are for people. God doesn't need it to be, like, super specifically one way or another way. And, you know, and some of these things, right, like they've been handed down, and that's how it happens. And other times there's experimentation of how things happen. And maybe sometimes new norms are kind of solidified in congregations. But that all these are kind of ways for people to feel God, to feel the Spirit, to encounter community. And we need to make space for the variety of ways in which people do that. And that part of, you know, adding a lot of different kinds of elements for our services is about exactly that. It's not, you know, God can only be manifest or present in, you know, one way, but that maybe God doesn't care about some of those particulars and is just present with the people, and how we engage with those feelings of spirit or connection, right? We're just trying to create the conditions for people to encounter God and encounter community. And those are kind of human-centered.
I really appreciate the way that you said that. And it reminded me of when you were talking about what happens in your congregation on a Sunday, and how a lot of times, especially in the past, but still a lot of times now, it becomes almost planning time of what are we going to do in the community. And I just want to raise up that, yes, you have a small congregation, but even big congregations work democratically that way. You know, we definitely take are things like budgets, what we're going to spend money on, what we're going to put our time and effort into. We take the whole body, we take what the whole body has to say about it into consideration. And so this coming Sunday, I'm actually going to lead the service. We're not going to do a typical service like what I just described. We are going to look through the lens of a ministry plan, which in Community of Christ, priesthood are supposed to fill out, and disciples membership can fill them out as well. But it just kind of gives a focus on what is our ministry going to look like this coming year. And so I'm going to walk the congregation through that process of kind of forming our own ministry plan. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see what giftedness we have, what our interests are, where we want the money that we have set aside for certain things. We had our business meeting this last fall, and we put aside, you know, X amount of dollars for mission, for abolishing poverty and peace and justice and things like that. And we're going to actually start formulating the ideas of what we want to do with those funds and who's going to spearhead these ministries that we want to do and we want to be engaged with in the community. And so, and that's worship. I mean, that's human led interactions with the divine. And, you know, absolutely, we are going to be encountering God in our community, and together we're going to decide what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we're going to have some visitors on Sunday. And so we're going to, you know, walk them through what we're doing and hope they're inspired. I do know that one of my first Sundays in Community of Christ was a business meeting, and people there were almost apologetic about it because they're like, oh, this is just a business meeting. And for me, that was such an excitement mm-hmm. to actually be in a meeting where I could hear women and men just talk about finances and talk about what we're going to do and how much money we're going to set aside for this or that, and where we want our focus to be, and all those things. It was just really exciting. So I think that's a big cultural point that I wanted to make sure that we lifted up, is just that, you know, you actually do have a voice in Community of Christ, and that you, if you want to bring something to the table, you know, the literal table, you can do that. And if you want to bring something to your community, there's a good chance that there's a way for you to get that accomplished.
Right. And I like the way that you brought up the business meeting and how we get to decide how congregational funds are used. My congregation doesn't necessarily have a ton of expenses. We borrow a building from the local Presbyterians, who are very generous to lend us, to just lend us their space for free, and have been for years, for which we are very, very, very grateful. But recently we had about our first congregational purchase, our first significant congregational purchase, which was for Pride, and we needed a karaoke machine, effectively an amplifier with a microphone, so that, because our service was going to be outdoors and we needed people to be able to hear our service. And you know, I went to Costco and I took a picture of the item and noted down how much it was going to cost, and then came back and talked to my congregation, and we voted on it. Right? Like, no one was like, yes, you can have money for this, or no, you can't have money for this, or no, you can't know how much money the congregation has. We had all that information to hand and together try and figure out how we can make that go as far as we want to. And that's just such a different approach that I'm used to, where, you know, as an LDS woman, I really never had anything to do with money other than to give it.
Exactly. And I have said this on the podcast and online everywhere, but the idea that I could do more as a non-member woman in Community of Christ than I ever would have been able to do as an LDS woman, as a faithful temple recommend holding, you know,
exactly,
the highest status of woman that you can get in the LDS church. You know, you still can't plan a worship service. Just things like that, that are, it doesn't have to be tied to gender, and yet it is. And so for me, being a woman, and just being granted those opportunities really pretty early on, and I guess that's probably another cultural thing, is that, you know, it was not long before I was one of the old timers, and I was one of the ones that, you know, I was approached by leadership and they got me involved right away. It was like, what are you interested in? What do you want to do? How do you want to contribute? And I just started finding ways to do that. And, you know, I wasn't given a calling. It was, what would you like to do? And it just took off from there. So,
and a similar thing happened with me and my congregation. I've, you know, almost always been involved in the organization of things, even long before I was a member of Community of Christ. And that's felt like a very natural role for me. And I've really enjoyed that role. And again, it was far more than I was able to do as an LDS woman. Yeah. And so I think that sometimes those gender roles can also be, maybe people are expecting it when they come to Community of Christ, but maybe it's also jarring or unusual or deeply meaningful to see people performing, people of different genders performing a variety of roles. You know, like right now you have a woman pastor, you've got Carla Long as your pastor. And you know, we love Carla, and I have Emily Rose as my pastor. And, you know, sometimes people are surprised to hear that, you know, that we have women pastors, or to see women bless and pass communion, or to be performing rituals and sacraments instead of just receiving them.
Exactly. And I think that I've kind of come face to face with that shock, or I don't know. Yeah, I guess shock would be the word that I would use. Sometimes we have, like I've said, we have kids come, and I think, you know, maybe the adults are more prepared for that sometimes. And the kids are like, what? She's passing the bread? Like, why is she? What, you know, it's very, very, very different. And I've actually had to, you know, just be frank with some kids that are very frank with you. And it's like, yeah, I actually am ordained, you know, this church allows me to do this. And yeah, it's been interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Nancy, anything else? I feel like we've skimmed the surface on a whole lot of stuff, but I feel like it was good, and it, you know, gets the conversation going. And I know that when I first stepped into Community of Christ space, I had no idea what to expect. And so I feel like a podcast like this would have been helpful for me. Yeah. Just kind of these are some of the elements that you might encounter, or that if just even the general idea that if there is something that is uncomfortable, maybe dig a little bit and figure out why it's uncomfortable and then sit with that. And that's okay. And not everything that a Community of Christ congregation does needs to be comfortable for you. Mm-hmm. And that we all encounter God differently, and that in Community of Christ, you are empowered enough to help shape and mold your church experience to be what your community needs. And it doesn't have to be super rigid or correlated or cookie cutter or whatever, that there's a lot of fluidity, you know, as long as we are holding to the identity, message, mission, and belief of the church, which is what holds it all together. So that was kind of the main message that I wanted to bring out in this conversation. So hopefully that came through, and hopefully it was a little bit entertaining along the way. So thanks for joining us for the conversation, Nancy. It's always a joy to have you on Project Zion, and I'm sure that I'll rope you on at some point to be on again.
Thanks, Brittany. Thanks for having me. I love having these conversations.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.